Hey, what's up, everybody? It's a members only episode. Hope everyone's good. Me and Rob were out here in Phoenix, which is we did a show on Thursday night. We did two shows last night on Friday. Tonight, Saturday. Is the busiest night of the whole weekend. So we haven't done that yet. But I will say already, this is one of the best clubs and markets
we've
done. Phoenix, great comedy town. That crowd last night.
I enjoyed the late show a lot. Late show was
that
great.
That late show crowd, they were just phenomenal. I mean, I thought the early show was great. I thought all the shows have been great so far, but that late show was particularly great.
Dude, I don't always, your whole new Trump Iran stuff is absolutely awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, because I tend to hang out in the green room too much, and then every once in a while you're working on new stuff. I'm like, I got to catch this, and I watched like the first 40 minutes of your set, and I was like, so much new stuff in there. It was great.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah,
I do the same with you, where like I try to not watch your whole set every show,
because right.
like, if you know what I mean,
yeah,
then it's
yeah.
almost like you get to, but then I like to every now and then, like, you know, you'll go out and be like, okay, let me watch Rob's whole set, and then you can see like what the new stuff is and what
you got
all
like
that.
30 minutes like new Iran War Epstein
listen,
stuff.
I got
it's if, pretty great.
If you want to get into the technical state of where my stand-up's at, it's I don't know, dude. I'm just forever
too much material.
I'm forever a mess. I'm just always. It's been years, man. Where like, so I did, I put out Libertas, my first hour special, in 2017, and I want to say that, yeah, 2017. So I started comedy in 2006. I put out my first comedy special 11 years into comedy, and it was like, it was the ideal, at least for me so far in my career, it was like the ideal way to put together
right.
a comedy special. It was like, and you could see it, like, so it's 2017, Libertas, the first 30 minutes of Libertas is basically all about 2016 and 2017. It's all about Donald Trump's rise and the run against Hillary Clinton, kind of all that shit. And then the second half is just the best shit I had written in 11 years. Like my favorite chunk
right.
on this, my favorite chunk on this, my favorite, like all, you know, and there was like, okay, there's an hour. And then, you know, like we've talked about it before, but it was like, okay, so then the next year I got married and had a kid. We had our daughter. And then 2019 was like, okay, now is like, okay, I'm putting together the new hour. And I was literally like, whatever it was like the last week in February, the first week in March of 2020. And I was literally like, I got the new hour now. And it's better than Libertas. Like, I was really excited about it. And it's the whole, it, at that time, it was like the whole fucking story of that year. Like, it was my whole joke about Donald Trump's coming up on his re-election campaign, the 4 years of Donald Trump. Then it was all about Joe Biden and the Democratic primary, and I had all these jokes. I'm like, I had a whole thing where I went through the list of all the candidates. Like, I went through Buttigieg, Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, blah, blah, blah. I had all these jokes on all of them. The only one that ever survived was the Elizabeth Warren
yeah,
joke.
Yeah.
The Elizabeth Warren joke I loved enough that I did even years later when it didn't really make sense anymore, but it was a good joke. But so I had this whole thing. And then fucking COVID happened, the lockdowns happened. And then I just couldn't do stand-up for months. There was no one was doing it. And I, you know, some of the other comics were, you know, they were trying to get me to come out to like Helium and Philly, because Shane and Jay and them were like doing a show. But I was like, I got a baby. Like, I'm not
right.
in the same situation as you. I was just like driving around to go do 15 minutes of stand-up somewhere. Like, anyway, so that fucked everything up. Then it put it all off another year. Then we had my son. We had all the health complications with him. That fucked it up. So anyway, I finally put out the half hour. Wasn't really that happy with it. But so I put out the half hour. And then now, as you know, I've just been building to this hour. I've had this hour for long. Now I'm at the point where I got all this new shit. So as a stand-up, it is really challenging.
Because
right. you're like, yo, I'm trying to work this hour that I want to put out. But then I got to work all this new shit because this is when I can work the new
right.
shit. And I have to have new shit because these people came out and saw me last year. I
right.
got to have new material for them. So it's like, I got to do the new material. But then I'm like, fuck, what do I do with it? I got like 2 hours now, dude. I don't know what to do with it. I might just put out 2 hours of comedy.
I
might just
be awesome.
Like, I might just be like, screw all you people. I'm giving you way, you're going to be bored by the end of this. You're not going to want to laugh for this long. But I'm just giving you everything so I can start from scratch and just build another hour organically. But anyway, but thank you is what I meant to say. Yeah. I could have just said thank you.
No, you got so much stockpiled, so it's cool.
Anyway, come out and see me on the road, and you will see all this new material that I got, and you won't see the old one, because I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. But I'm having a good time. The shows are great while I'm figuring out. It's just I'm really having trouble getting the hour together. By the way, do you have a water by any chance in here?
Not that I already drank from. Unless they put some in. I got fancy, I got an unopened coconut water. You want some coconut water?
I'll try it. You know what? Is there a cup in here?
I got cups. Do they give you cups? Bathroom, I believe.
Because, yeah, maybe just pour some in a cup. I don't want to waste your whole thing. You may not even like it. Oh, there you go.
Look at that. I stole the water from,
Look at you. I knew this little Jew thief would come in handy one of these days. Thank you.
That's sparkling.
That's fine. Fine by me. I'll be fancy. By the way, there's one clip of me out there.
Yeah.
Where Ari, which of all the types of pranks that Ari pulls, and I don't think this was even intentional, but like I like sparkling water just fine, as much as the next guy.
Right.
I don't mind. I like regular water, like fizzy water. It's fine. But dude, there's this one time where we're doing his podcast. We're doing it for hours, and he's just had a thing of water. He's just been pouring me water, you know, and I'm drinking, and I was drinking flat water, and then he just poured me sparkling,
yeah.
and dude, you going in for it when you right. think it's gonna be flat
water.
and it's yeah. sparkling water. It gives you like a yeah. like your life flashes
you had a
before
moment
your
where
eyes.
You're like,
yeah.
Was that his piss? Did yeah, he just give me his piss? What was that?
Especially because it's Ari yeah. too. So like in some way, nothing's off.
Is that
the table.
Acid? You did I just get a dosed?
I don't know how I was letting him pour me a drink, but yeah. But for a second, you're like, I don't understand things. How does everything work? What is everything? Anyway. Yeah, but anyway, really fun shows, and this Desert Ridge Improv is a beautiful club. Really, really nice club out here in Phoenix. But yeah, okay, so let's talk about some stuff. What,
Love Taps.
It's just too, I said on the last podcast, we've reached the you're fucking with me phase of this war. Like, so now the latest thing is, yeah, he announced it was over. That was our last show. Our last show was Donald Trump publicly announcing that epic fury was over, the war is concluded, and what are they calling it, Rob? A memorandum of understanding or something is going to be reached that could open the door for... Anyway, the news since then, Trump bombed Iran. That's the news since then. And they, dude, I mean, it's just, it's beyond Orwellian. Oh, George never even thought of anything like this. Like, it's next level beyond Orwellian. Like, he goes, yes, we bombed them, but we don't view this as a violation of the ceasefire. Like, we don't, that still is a ceasefire. Even directly bombing them. Like, it's not a ceasefire if you still have a blockade. A blockade is an act of war. That's a military blockade. It's a major act of war. It's one of the major war acts that you do in a war. So, like, that's not a ceasefire. But then you're bombing the country. Like, okay, so then ceasefire now has absolutely no meaning. There's literally no meaning. What you call ceasefire, the rest of us were quite comfortable calling war.
Well, we never had a war. We never had a ceasefire.
Yeah, like, you it's know, just unbelievable.
It's all just made up nonsense.
Oh, yeah. It's, and I will say, man, you know, it's, I don't know, there's, as I've said before, I think that, there's a lot of just, like, manipulative media coverage of this stuff, as is always the case in wars. I think, like, really the drop site guys have been doing the best coverage that I've seen anywhere. And the Breaking Point show, which is, of course, kind of connected to them, because Ryan, you know, works on both. But the thing about it is, right, is that Iran is really saying, at every step of this, essentially, Iran isn't going to completely capitulate. They're like, no, we cannot do that, and for obvious reasons, because they're like, well, then you'll just right. come back. Like, we can't. And every single time, Donald Trump's like, okay, well, then he's got to threaten a big thing. But every time he threatens a big thing, they go, okay, but we're going to do a big thing to Saudi Arabia and the UAE if you do a big thing to us. Like, that every time. And I don't know. I guess at this point, like, like, it's a genuine question to me that's an open question up in the air of, like, are they bluffing? Like, it's clearly Donald Trump's bluffing, at least to some degree. Are they bluffing? What would they do if Donald Trump did just start taking out bridges. Would they actually, you know what I mean? Because like, there is something about the escalation spiral where like, it ends with everyone losing, including Iran, including the regime in Iran. Like, they also, on some level, like, because I try to like do good analysis on this and call, but not just be led by like your convictions on it or whatever, but like, you know, up the escalation
spiral. At the end of the day,
enough,
they don't want to get nuked.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they, right. It goes bad for them if it keeps going up. And so, and or just, you know, collapsing the regime in some sense. Like, there is, even short of nuclear weapons, which Donald Trump did specifically invoke the other day. I mean, he said they might
flash
look like glass. Or, no, he said glass.
Oh.
Something along the lines of glass, which is a, you know, reference to nuking a desert. I don't know if it actually would turn sand into glass. I don't understand. That's where my knowledge of physics is out. But it would definitely destroy a lot of shit. But even short of nuclear weapons, like, there is a conventional bombing campaign that we could do that probably would topple the regime. Like, not leave no one in power. Leave it as a failed state, essentially. So, okay, they don't want that. But at the same time, they kind of can't just sit back and take it and not do something else. So, like, my assumption is that they might be very serious about taking out, like, a desalination plant and then going, okay, do you want to keep going up the escalation line? You know, so, like, I don't know, but that's a real problem that is, it's like, it's hard to overstate. In the Western media, it's like that is just completely ignored. Like, it's almost like the question on the table, if you just read any piece in The Atlantic or in Axios or whatever, it's like, well, Donald Trump's threatened to do this big thing, so we'll see. Either he'll do it or he won't. But no one's going like, hey, listen, dude, they are saying that fucking they're going to do this thing. And then quietly, you know, it's like with all these fucking wars, Rob, you know, I know I've mentioned before that, like, so I go on Piers Morgan every week for whatever it's been, 2.5 years now. And every week I'm debating a different Zionist about, say, the war in Gaza, or all of 2024. Just every week I'm debating them. And every single time the topic, their talking point is that they don't trust the Gaza Health Ministry numbers. Every single one of them, down to, oh, you're saying it's been 30,000 killed? Oh, that's just those are Hamas numbers. Oh, so you must love Hamas since you trust them and trust their numbers so much, right? Like, for a year and a half, this is the talking point. And then very quietly, the IDF goes, we concur with the IDF. We can concur with the Health Ministry of Gaza's numbers. That's about right. So they just admit it. There's a year and a half of them. By the way, not one of these motherfuckers comes out and apologizes. Not one of them goes, man, I got on national television and said this thing over and over again that all sides now agree is right. And you know why Israel conceded? Because the death count's far higher. It's clearly over 100,000 people have been killed in Gaza. It's just, while there's all this in the media, then just quietly this week, between all the reports now we got the CIA, their own estimate is that the Iranians can tolerate this blockade for months, not weeks. That they can, they're like, they could probably go like 4 or 5 months of tolerating this in Iran before the economy truly falls apart. So, hey, that's a pretty goddamn big concession. Because can we keep the Strait of Hormuz closed for 4 months? Does anyone believe that? I don't, without crashing the world economy. I mean, I don't know, just do the numbers, right? 20% of the world's oil is held hostage for 4 months. That's gotta be devastating. The other one, this was from earlier, but the other one, of course, the Pentagon telling Congress that actually it would take 6 months for us to militarily open the Strait of Hormuz and we could only do it after the war. Like, there's just these little quiet
admissions.
And then you got
the Washington Post CIA piece.
Yes. Oh, did I not mention that? I'm sorry. That was the other one that I was looking for. This huge Washington Post piece the other day that now the CIA is estimating that Iran still has, what were they saying, 70% of their intercontinental ballistic missiles. So all of that talk about how, like, everything's been destroyed, no, complete bullshit. They've only burned through 30%, according to the CIA, of their missiles. So they can keep going like this for months. So again, the point is, like, when you miss that reality in your reporting, it becomes like it's a question of a wish list. Well, what do we want? What do we want to do here? Do we want to do that? Whereas, like, no, the real question here is, what are we able to do? You know, like, it's like, if you're walking down the street and you see John Jones slapping his girlfriend around, okay, which is a thing you could see from court documents. It is possible to have seen that at some point. I kid, John Jones. Don't hurt me. But I'm just saying, the question isn't like, you're like, I think I got to go kick that guy's ass. Is it the right thing to do to go beat the shit out of that guy to save this chick or not? You're like, no, you can't do that. That's not an option, okay? Like, you can go get your ass kicked. That's an option if you want to do that. Maybe while he's beating the shit out of you, she escapes. That's possible. But anyway, the point is, there is reality to all of this, what you're capable of. And we're not capable of any of this shit. Seems pretty obvious.
I would reduce the Iranian position down to fuck you, period, Allah Akbar. And Donald Trump's in a bit of a mess here, that the skill set of just overwhelming threats and bluster is it being matched by, you know, some real hard-ass Iranians.
Yep.
Because, like, you look at Donald Trump's career, you know, it, like, at one point he tried creating his own NFL.
Oh, that's right.
And it's classic Trump. I got the better league. I got the better players, blah, blah, blah. And then a year later, and they actually, I think, had a decent business, and Trump kind of blew it up. A year later, it blows up, but he's on to the next thing. And it doesn't matter, because if he behaves that way all the time, some things hit, some things don't.
Yep.
But in a warfare environment, the strategy just doesn't work, because you're actually met with horrific consequences.
Yeah.
It's not just, oh, I didn't make money on this one. And it just seems like he does not have the skill set to acknowledge defeat or scale back, and so he's just very stuck.
Yeah, I think that's right. And he's already burned so much of his own base.
Yeah, he's just a victim of his own arrogance. Like, yeah, we can do the strikes, I'm sure it'll be great, to say that it was, you know, say that it was wonderful if it wasn't, and just didn't do his homework on the Hormuz Strait or, you know, the Iranian capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a victim of his own arrogance, and he's a victim of his own weakness. I mean, because it really is like a profound, you know, like, in the sense that there's, you know, there's like a level of like, I don't know, honor or bravery or like strength where so maybe like, okay, it might, you might be scared to say like get in a fight. Right. And then, like, say there was like a situation like where it was noble to fight someone, you know, you're protecting someone or whatever. And then it might take a certain amount of strength or bravery to get yourself to like, yo, let me get in a fucking fight, because I'm going to, because this is the right thing. I got to protect this child or whatever. And but then let's say on a whole different level of like strength, there might be like fucking Dustin Poirier goes out to a bar tonight and some fucking dude's talking all types of shit to his chick. And like in that situation, you could almost see where like it would be a moment of weakness for Dustin Poirier to beat the shit out of that guy. And actually the true strength there is for him to go, okay, like I'm a fucking professional killer. I know what I could do to this guy. We're actually just gonna walk away, because what the fuck is the point? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And there's almost like, to be a president, there's no more important, like if you really wanna talk about strength, there's no more important thing than like, could you stand up to a fucking lobby that's trying to get you into a war? Because Donald Trump doesn't read books. He's not well informed. Yes, he's all bravado, but he's not like that stupid that he doesn't know. He's articulated himself through the years many times what a disaster this war would be, and the forces that try to pull you into war in Washington, D.C., and how he, like, he's aware of that. There's some level where that, no matter what it is, whether he's being blackmailed, then that's weakness, that he wouldn't just take the hit that he, before leading your nation into war. If he's just being persuaded, that's weakness. If he's just being pressured, that, no matter what it is, it's like, you know, there's a real, and Donald Trump is, you know, the bully is never really the toughest guy. He's always been a bully. That's kind of who he is. And that's always a guy who's actually a coward deep down. You know, like, it's, so it's hubris, it's cowardice, it's all those things. Nothing good, man. Nothing good. But at the very least, he does seem to really be desperate at this point to get out of it. So he is trying. And I think, you know, I've heard people saying that, I think Danny Davis said on his show the other day that his sources are telling him, and he was a real deal, you know, high-ranking military career guy, And he said, what he's hearing is that Donald Trump at this point is basically like, if I get a deal, I can spend that. You know, No matter what the deal is, if we have a deal, let me handle the saying this is the greatest deal ever. Because that's what I do. So I just need something. I need something so I can sell it. I think also right now, the Iranians are aware of that factor. And I think they're aware of not wanting Trump to be able to sell this as a win.
They want to punish him.
Well, for their own, for their own protection, I think partially. They want the attitude to be that, like,
don't fuck with the Iranians, it's not worth it.
Well, they want every American to fucking take the lesson here that, man, we better never fuck with these guys again. That was a really bad idea. And that's why, you know, the Persians are savvy, man. And they're as we've seen, like, even their Lego freak AI videos and stuff, like, they're aware of the PR game. They're aware of all of this stuff. All those countries are. That's the one kernel of truth when all the Zionists say we're all paid for by Qatar or whatever. It's like, okay, none of us have taken a dime from Qatar. And fucking, I don't know. It's just ridiculous. But there is truth that, like, all those countries are aware of this dynamic, the one that we talk about every time. Like, the fact that the podcasters are turning the American people against the government, like, they're aware of that shit. And, you know, because it's all super relevant to them that the empire is what fucking really moves shit.
So we are aligned with Qatar?
For free. It's the worst of all worlds. We don't get paid. We just do their bidding. I don't know exactly how much we actually do their bidding. But, you know, because the thing about it is that the America First kind of, like, movement in general has a lot of implications on fucking those countries, too. But, you know, that was another thing, I guess, is a, what was this? Oh, goddamn, I've just been reading too much about this shit, and I'm blanking on what fucking information came from where. But it has come out, I think it was in the New York Times, that evidently a big factor in why Operation Freedom, or whatever, Project Freedom, whatever they were calling it, one of the reasons why it only lived a day was because the Saudis shut it down.
Yeah. And I don't have a full understanding of this, and it's just tough in this environment, but the boats that came through, there were only two of them. They were American boats, but they weren't just American boats. They were American boats that have, like, a relationship with the Army, that if, like, the Navy needs civilian boats, they have an agreement that they're taking those boats. And I think, I'm not sure on this, I think that means that those two boats might actually be insured by the American military.
That's interesting.
And so the fact that got those two boats out is irrelevant to the idea that the straits are open or that other boats would take on the risk.
Right. So and Dropsite had a few great articles about this. But so that is an interesting question, which I didn't even think of. I didn't even think to ask, let alone get answered, is who was insuring those two boats. That is a very good question. But again, the real test rate is that the issue isn't whether you can get these boats that are, like, in military contracts through. The issue is, can you get all these private boats throughout the world who are right? And so, of course, the dynamic is they couldn't get any of them. And it's not even just that, like, it's unclear, I guess, whether they could have safely gotten them, you know, passage through the Strait of Hormuz. But the point is that none of them would do it because these people are just people. These aren't fucking soldiers. There's some guy who works, this is his job. You know what I mean? And, like, so in the same sense that, like, you know, like, when we think about these things, you know, we're thinking the U.S. military is going to open this thing and have these ships come through. But it's almost like if Natalie, our producer, we were just like, oh, hey, we're going to need you to, like, look up this thing, or we're going to need you to pull up this video, or we're going to need to record at this time. She might go like, okay, cool. But if I was like, hey, I'm going to also need you to get on this boat and go through the Strait of Hormuz, where the Iranian government has said you're not allowed to and we will open fire on you. At a certain point, Natalie might be like, no, because, like, I'm not like a soldier here. You don't actually own me. I'm not taking a risk to my life to get fucking oil through a strait. Like, I don't know, for some company.
They need a new version of Deadliest Catch, like Deadliest Transport.
Yeah, like, but you can see, like, these a lot of these ships. And by the way, there is a legit, like, humanitarian crisis going on right now.
The people have been stuck out there forever. Stuck.
Yeah, man. There's, like, real... These are regular people who just work a job. These aren't soldiers in a war. And they're just, like, they're, you know, they're running out of food. And they're, you know, they also just, like... It's a pretty miserable thing, I'm sure, to be stuck on a fucking boat out there for all this time. Like, I don't know. I don't know exactly how luxurious these boats are. But yeah. So the whole thing was a complete failure. But the angle that the Saudis were actually the ones who said, like, yo, we're not going to let you use the bases here for this, is a big deal. That came as Iran was allegedly... hitting the UAE, and again, it's like, it shows, obviously, Saudi Arabia and Iran are regional enemies. Saudi Arabia is nothing but incentivized to want the worst for Iran. The point is, if they're saying that, it's because they go, we take these threats of retaliation seriously, and we think this is a security risk to us, and of course, the US has already demonstrated that, like, we're not really going to protect you when shit comes down to it. So why the fuck would you just do whatever we want? Let's play the Miriam Adelson one, and then we could get into the Zach Galifianakis stuff, because I want to talk about that, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, too. I think this is from a little while ago. This might be a few weeks ago, or maybe it's recent, I'm not sure. I heard Tom Woods mention this. Tom Woods, on his show, I was listening to it. He had Daniel McAdams on, two legends, love both of those guys. And Tom had just mentioned that Miriam Adelson was asked this question, and this was her answer. And I was like, really? I don't remember seeing that. And then, you know, maybe I did see it. I don't know, I see too many of these things and they all bled together. But dude, this is just... This was up there with one of the most... The one when Donald Trump called her out for preferring Israel to America. This was, like, on that level of you just can't believe this bitch says these things. So let's pull up Mary Madison. This is the number one donor to Donald Trump and the Republican Party. Mary Madison.
She looks like if Trump was playing the scientist from Back to the Future.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she spent, too much time in, like... a tanning booth, went through the that flying car thing.
Yes, there we are. Okay, here's Miriam Adelson.
You and Sheldon created a lot of relationship over the years with politicians at the state level, especially at the federal level.
Yeah,
I play this.
I want you to share with everyone why is it so important and how do you do it? Again, writing checks is part of it, but there is more than writing just checks. So how do you do it?
Can you allow me not to answer?
You choose.
I want to be truthful, and there are so many things that I don't want to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, we don't want specific, but that's okay. But everyone should know here how important...
You can close it. I mean, yeah, I remember this thing. It was from a while ago.
I think we might have played this on the show, but no, but she says more. I forget what she says, but it's something... She says something very specific about how to gain influence with people.
Oh, okay. Well, here, let's play the rest of this video clip. No, I think we did. I think we played on the show like a different segment from this same event. Okay. But here, let's keep playing.
Opportunities to get involved, because the reason that both of you were able to make huge differences is because you got involved and you spent a lot of time and yes, money, a lot of money on it, but you got involved and you cared. And that's what everyone here need to know, that, you know, complaining and doing nothing is not going to get us anywhere. And you guys have done completely the opposite. So thank you both.
Yeah, I think that's it. But like, dude, just the fact that this bitch is on record where they go at the Israeli-American Council meeting and they go, you know, he's trying to be like, hey, look, everybody, we're all on the same team here, right? This is a whole bunch of fucking Zionist Jewish people hanging out here. Like, y'all got to get involved. Look how involved they got. Miriam Adelson, like, you know, you've been able to really influence U.S. politics. This woman's the number one donor to the Republican Party and the President of the United States. And he goes, but it's not just the checks. You know, it's lots of other ways. Like, how do you influence? And she goes, just allow me not to answer that question. She goes, I want to be truthful. And it seemed like a sincere moment. She goes, listen, I don't want to lie. So like, let's just not talk about that. It's like, yo, like, all I'm saying is, how does anybody, and listen, I disagree with conspiracy theorists all the time, and I'm always a guy who points out, like, let's not be kooks and let's not jump to wild conclusions, but how do you ever come down against the conspiracy theory when that's the official answer?
Right.
You know, like, the official answer is, I don't even have a thing I can tell you here. It's like, can we just not?
You got to open up an island and fly, like, some people out there.
I mean, it's a little, okay, she's not saying that, but she's not not saying that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, she's basically going, look, you got to get a lot of these guys with their pants down near a 14-year-old. You know, what can I say? I don't know, man. I don't know. You just look at something like that, you're like, yeah, you can't really, this is why people fucking start to believe, like, and the truth is, I don't even know what I believe in the scheme of these things. Like, what do they do? What is the deepest level of blackmail? I guess I'll just say, like, between, you know, like, in the same way, you could read these books. There's, like, I don't know, there's great books. I'm sure you've read a bunch of them, but there's, like, you know, you read books like Chaos, the book about the CIA and Manson, right. And you know, there's books about MK Ultra and just, you know, Rise and Kill First by Ronan Bergman, or just, you know, it's a book on the history of Israeli targeted assassinations. And you read that stuff, and then it's like, you're just like, oh, this is history. It's not even really controversial. It's not like anybody's, right, like saying, I mean, it's a little bit controversial, but it's not like anyone's really challenging the historical accuracy of any, right, of that shit. But then if you ever even suspect that maybe some shit like that's going down now, they're like, dude, where are you getting that from? What do you think? You think the CIA is doing mind control shit? Like, well, why the fuck not? We know they've done it. You know, so, like, I guess my point is, I don't know exactly what they're doing right now, but I guarantee if we did know, it'd be some dark, crazy shit. You know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah, dude, they have, we know they tried to blackmail Bill Clinton with the Monica Lewinsky thing. Like, they fuck, you know, like. And then, of course, again, I mean, like, I don't know, but people do wonder, because, like, once you know that they tried to blackmail them with the Monica Lewinsky thing, you're like, hey, maybe that was the whole thing. You know, like, maybe that was the whole thing. Maybe the whole thing was a true, maybe she was in on it. Maybe, who the fuck knows? But all you know is Miriam Adelson ain't answering questions. So, we'll see. Nothing to see here, guys. Just a foreign spy casually refusing to admit how she compromises the government. All right, let's do the Zach Galifianakis thing, because I don't know, this really, I found this interesting. I respect Zach Galifianakis and Conan O'Brien, like, as comedians, and there was even part of it that I kind of agreed with, that kind of rang true to me, but then, of course, it made me furious at the same time. And this is just a topic that's, I don't know, it's, I don't know, I guess it resonates with me a lot because it's about me. I mean, so, like, you know, it's about what the role of comedians in talking about politics is. And you're like, well, Jesus fucking Christ. I mean, there's not that many things in my life that I, like, really goddamn specialize in. But those are them. Those are the two things. I could testify in court as an expert witness on talking about politics or stand-up comedy or whatever. Like, you know, I've been doing both for 20 years. And anyway, let's get into it. Let's play a little bit of it. It was Zach Galifianakis. He's on Conan O'Brien's podcast. And they start getting into comedians and comedians who supported Trump and stuff like that. So let's play the clip.
On our show back in the day, and people didn't know you, and you'd sit at a piano and you would tell these great jokes, but you never winked, you never, you know, shot them a look, like, you never ingratiated yourself with the crowd. You just completely went in and they had to accept you as you were. And I think you have to do that for a while in order to have people meet you halfway.
I think I think you're right. I also think, if comedically, I should say only, I've always thought it's more interesting if you're just doing a stand-up bit like that, to have kind of a disdain for the audience. Mm-hmm. You know, I never was like, hi, I'm going to tell some, like, friendly. All right, yeah. Let's tell stuff. See, stand-ups come out like, what's up, Miami? I'm like, that's, God, that's a lot
you
of energy.
You don't want to know how Miami's doing. Miami, I have no concern or interest in you.
I respect the audience, but I can tell you a lot of stories that would go against that.
Can you turn the volume back up?
Well,
is that possible?
We've talked about it. I won't go into it, but I do think that was particularly helpful to you when you did your famous Between Two Ferns interview with Obama, because you're the only person that gave him, I mean, you know, I know that this in any way was just you doing your comedy, but you were so rude as that person. Right. And it's hilarious because I don't think anyone's talked to, certainly a sitting president, or even in this time, no one's talked that way.
Well, all the podcasters
president.
That have had the president on now, they don't do their court gesture. They don't do it. They just, mm-hmm. they suck up to him.
Yeah.
So the comedians
yep.
that have had, that are podcasters that have had Trump on, that's, they're not doing their job.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're, that's not the job of a comedian. You are to challenge.
Yeah.
You are to make uncomfortable. You're not to sit there and fake laugh.
Yep.
That is not the job of the court jester.
Yeah.
Period. So yeah. Mm-hmm. there is a difference. People were actually, somebody yesterday was talking to me about that, about, you know, political influence through comedy and all that stuff. I'm more interested in the comedy first.
Me too.
You know,
right, yeah.
So
yeah.
No, I mean, whatever there, whatever.
Let's pause it. Sorry. You told me I had to signal. Okay. So I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, Rob, because I think there is, there's not no point to what he's saying, but I guess so, and we can get into that in a second. Like, you know, like, cause there's something there, but I guess the thing that's just infuriating about this is the goddamn hypocrisy. And it is just like, it is crazy to like, I don't know. It's almost like if you dropped yourself into, let's say Birmingham, Alabama in 1945. And you saw one black guy who was like, man, these fucking white people. And you were like, whoa, it is not cool to talk about an entire race that way. And you were like, that's your comment? That's your comment. Not on the structural system of apartheid that's going on here, but your comment is on that one of the, you know, like the idea that you are gonna come out here and say, hey, these comedians, and we're talking about the podcasters who had Trump on, they're not doing their job of making fun of power and doing that. They're just have, you're like, oh, I'm sorry. Have you been in a coma for 15 years? Have you had anything to say about Jimmy Kimmel and fucking Stephen Colbert and literally all these guys who were, they were dancing with vaccines, dude, rather than make fun of the goddamn establishment. You're talking about fake laughter? Dude, these guys, anytime Obama went on any goddamn comedian's show, except for Zach Galifianakis, I'll give him that, but like, Zach Galifianakis did a character. He did a comedy thing. Not everyone does character shit. That's why some of us go out and go, what's going on, Miami? How are we? Because I'm a human being. That's just me. That's how I would talk to a group of people. I'm not like that high energy with it, but you know what I mean? Like, but that you do a very specific thing. But for you to sit here and say, so you're not calling out Marc Maron for doing the goddamn exact same thing, but with Barack Obama, right? Actually probably much worse a version of it than Theo or any of them. You're not calling out the entire like comedy industry that stopped doing their job and all became cheerleaders of the regime for 15 fucking years. Like, we're supposed to forget that? Then you're coming back into it with this criticism of obviously Joe Rogan and Theo Vaughn and stuff without saying their names. Like, I don't know. I just find that to be kind of weak.
Yeah, you're giving me a lot to think about here, Davey Smith. I mostly agree with you that I guess the framing's dishonest. He's not actually upset that comedians were doing, you know, more of a radio show and not being funny in that environment. It's more of just a criticism of right-wing and people that have platformed right-wing ideas. So I agree with you. Like, he's being mostly dishonest here. I don't know, there's like a purity to comedy. And so like from like a comic perspective, I get his point here, which is like more ideally comedians should be in the, and like you're, yes, he's a brilliant comedian and he does a character thing. And if you're like asking me what's the best way to sit down with a politician, it's what he did.
For, yes, like, if you want Zach Galifianakis, he's
no,
great
but I'm
at
saying
that.
Like,
yeah.
But I'm saying like, if you want to look at things from a comedy purity perspective, what do I think's better for the art form of comedy? Joe Rogan interviewing Donald Trump or Zach Galifianakis doing roast jokes with Donald Trump? It's Zach Galifianakis. Like, I'm saying, he's not,
I agree with that.
He's not like dishonest from like a comedy purity perspective. But with that said, the framing is dishonest because that's not really what he's trying to
also,
do. He's trying to poke at the right. And then also it's like, there's a long legacy of George Carlin included. There's a long legacy of comedians who don't always do stand-up comedy and have something very interesting to say. And we were talking about this in the green room. Comedians who are dramatic actors will then do an interview where they talk about dramatic acting. And no one goes, hey, how come you're not being funny right now?
Or
you pointed out even what he's doing in this moment.
Well, that's exactly the thing, right? So it's like, look, I understand the like, this is the thing that like people don't know about me. I mean, like, you know this about me, right? And I think people who come out to see my show sometimes learn this about me, is that I was a pure stand-up comic. Like, that was, I started in stand-up comedy. I was obsessed with the theory and the philosophy of being a comedian. Then I'm also this guy who's obsessed with politics and ranting about that. And like, our show is not a comedy show. The part of the problem is not like, we're not really coming at, like, you are more of a comedian than me on the show. But even you are making a lot of points. You're breaking a lot of things down. We're a news show. We're a show about the news. Like, that's what this is. But then, so if someone wants to say, well, hey, dude, you're not, like, doing comedy. Like, what kind of comedian are you? It's like, well, I do stand-up comedy. And when you come see me there, that is a different thing, man. Like, that is my entire current 3 hours of material is all about being funny. None of it's about anything else than that. And that is always the most important part. So in that sense, Galifianakis is right. Like, it's I care about your jokes, not your, okay, fine, that is the comedian perspective. But then, of course, you get into this other thing, right? Like, okay, so are you telling me, let me just ask you this, when Robin Williams does a dramatic role, are you going, dude, he's not being funny at all? I watched Good Will Hunting. There was like maybe two laughs. Like, what is that? It's like, no, because that's not what he's doing right now, right? And I don't think anyone is calling that a betrayal of being a comedian. Or again, as you pointed out, what Zach Galifianakis is doing right now in this moment. Right now as he's doing it. See, he has to engage in like a performative contradiction to even criticize comedians who are doing that. Because like, you're not being very funny right now. Is that Mr. Comedian? Oh, I'm sorry. You have a serious point that you wanted to make. Are you not allowed to do that? Like, are you somehow just handcuffed as a human being? You can't ever just, because right now you got a point you want to make. And so you're not trying to be funny. You're going, no, I want to say this thing because I think I'm right. Okay, so that's what I'm doing too. That's what, you know what I mean? So that, like, in the same way you go, dude, I'm fucking watching the UFC, as we're going to go watch in the green room tonight. We're going to watch the UFC. Be like, dude, Rogan hasn't told one joke. He hasn't told one joke this whole time. He's just talking about a Kimura lock. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, what? Why is he just talking about submission grappling and he hasn't told, because that's not what he's doing right now. But I'm telling you, if you go to the Comedy Mothership on Wednesday and Thursday, Joe Rogan's telling jokes on stage. Like, that's what, it's just, it's a different thing. Anyway, my point is, like, so you're engaged in that too. Now, the Joe Rogan Experience isn't exactly a comedy show. I don't know. Like, it can be at times, you know, sometimes it is, sometimes it's a very serious show. Sometimes it's a political show. Sometimes it's a science show. Sometimes it's a diet show. It's, you know, like, it's, that's kind of the magic of it. That it is this, it's like a modern version of like a talent show or something like that almost. Whereas like, say, Andrew Schultz's show is more of a comedy show. Like, it is more of him like still rattling off jokes. And I think Andrew Schultz was being funny with Trump. I don't really remember the interview that much, but I think they were all doing the same thing where they make jokes and they're all laughing. He had one thing where he was going, remember he had his thing, he had one bit that was really funny where he goes, so Barron is, Barron is like a teenager now. Handsome kid, big, tall guy. He's Donald Trump's son. You know, he goes, You sure about that making abortion a legal thing? You know, and I was like, oh, that's a fucking really funny joke, dude. Like, I don't care if you're left or right. That's just on paper. That's a fucking funny joke. This is just what I remember of this interview from a year and a half ago or whatever. So, like, I don't know. That's being a comedian, dude. Right. Being a comedian isn't only... Because now also, hey, who's adding in shit here? If the purest position here is a comedian supposed to be funny, that doesn't necessarily have to be being funny, making fun of the guy right in front of you, or being funny, tearing down the establishment. Funny joke's a funny joke. That's comedy. That's the pure comedy answer. So, actually, Schultz was being a comedian. What you're really mad about here, this is almost like the dirty trick Douglas Murray tried to play on me, right? Is that you come in and you go, he goes, well, Joe, I just think it's like, you know, do you think you've had as many pro-Israel guests on as you have guests that are critical of Israel? And it's like, yeah, dude, but you're not complaining that he had more pro-Trump guests than pro-Kamala Harris guests. That's not actually your beef. Your beef isn't actually the ratio. Your beef is that you don't like anti-Israel people. You know, and it's like, same with Zach Galifianakis here. Your beef with them isn't that. Your beef here is that their general demeanor was friendly. The tone of the interview wasn't, I fucking hate this guy, I think he's a bad person. The tone of it was like, hey, it's cool that you're here. Let's talk. That's your problem. And so it's like you're masking this in like comedy purity when that's not really what's going on here. The thing is that you guys are all a bunch of liberals and you really don't like Donald Trump's sensibilities. That's really that's what it comes down to for liberals. It's not like us. And the funny thing about it is, right, is for all these years of them being hysterical about Donald Trump, just like insanely hysterical, and we never had that. We weren't but right now, we're like his fiercest critics on much more principled ground. Like, we actually hate that Donald Trump launched us into a war. We hate that Donald Trump kept Fauci on the jet. Like, we have things about, these guys don't. These guys love Barack Obama. They love him. Even if Zach Galifianakis made fun of him in his interview, he loves him. They all love, they don't have a problem with the war. They love COVID stuff. They don't have a problem with any of that. They were fine with all of it. What they don't like about Donald Trump is that, you know, he says grab him by the pussy. He brags about how much money he has. He's like kind of gross. He's kind of like, he talks about other races in a not really sensitive way, you know? Like, he doesn't apologize for his toxic masculinity. Like, that's their beef with him. And so it's just, all of this isn't what you're presenting it as. It's reduced down to you just don't like this guy. That's all it is.
Yeah, it's like every comedian that's done some left documentary that was more serious. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, look, this guy's got a passion project. They're never going to criticize that. And and on the topic of comedy purity, like when you're on stage going, I'm doing stand-up comedy, it's got to be stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
If it's clapter, you and I will be the first to be, that's not stand-up comedy.
I hate it. I hate when I get claps in stand-up. I tell almost every night I say something the audience claps at and I tell them to stop clapping. Because I don't like that. That's not what we're here for right now. Like, no.
It depends on how much it's thrown off my rhythm. I like to. I like to bask in it a little bit.
No, listen. I'll tell you. Look, this is real inside stand-up purity shit. There's getting an applause break is great.
Right.
There's not if you. But like, what an applause break is almost supposed to be is like you hit your joke. It's like there's like tag, 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 punchline, okay? And it goes like, ha, 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 ha. And then when they recover from laughing, it's like, yo, that was fucking good.
Right.
Dude, that's cool. It's them coming out of laughter and then enjoying your joke.
Right.
What I hate is when my setup to the joke is, now listen, you know I'm against these wars. Blah, 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 punchline.
Right.
And I go, hey, I'm against these words. It's like, stop. We're not doing a thing. I'm setting up a funny joke here. It's not about that. So, like, anyway, if you want to get into purist stand-up stuff, that's the clapping that you don't like. You don't want the reaction to be applause rather than laughter.
And then on the same note, even if, like, in the political comedy lane, if you choose to do something that you think is funny and it's not funny, then you failed. But if you choose, hey, I'm interested in this other thing and I'm going to do a serious thing, you can make that choice and people can choose whether or not to watch it. But like if you're being genuinely you, to me, in the lane of stand-up comedy, there's nothing to criticize. What you can criticize is if you're like, oh, this guy was a right winger, got a check from CNN, and is clearly doing something different because he got a check. Now you're a sellout.
Yes. That's right.
That becomes obvious. But anytime you're doing you and pursuing whatever your genuine passion is, like if Zach Galifianakis decided to go paint tomorrow,
that's right.
Is anyone going, hey, your paintings aren't funny?
Yeah.
No, you decided to paint. Good for you.
No, that's right. And again, I just, you know, so, right. So in terms of the purity of it, I just disagree. I just don't think, like, I don't know. I think you can, right, you can do different things. Joe Rogan can be an MMA commentator and a stand-up comedian. Robin Williams can be a dramatic actor and a stand-up comedian. The people can do different things. There's no reason why you can't have anything outside of, and like also just, I love stand-up comedy. I mean, I fucking love it. Like it made contact with my life and I've never been the same person since. It's like, there's very few things in my life, like literally it would have to be, I mean, don't get me wrong, I like my wife and kids the most, but like, it's on the level of meeting my wife or having my kids. Like, it's something that I made contact with and then defines who I am for the rest of my days. Like, I love the art of stand-up comedy. I love everything. I'm like, I hate flying, I hate sleeping in hotel rooms, but I'm fucking excited for tonight, dude. We got two fucking sold-out shows. It's gonna be great, man. We're gonna go have a great time. Like, I just love, I love jokes, I love the structure, I love setting up complex bits, like, all of it. But like, I don't think it makes me any less of a comedian that I don't exclusively try to be funny in life. Sometimes I talk to my wife about important shit. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, and I'm not just going for a punchline. Like, okay, so then why can't we record that sometimes? Like, well, it's just, so it doesn't actually follow to me as a purist comedian that I can't just have my take on the news. And then, again, the thing that, as I mentioned before, but it's just, to make this point, the reason why I said, you know, it's like talking about a black guy being racist in the middle of Jim Crow, is that it is just like, dude, what, like, if we just sat here and thought of the examples, I remember
every Kamala Harris appearance.
Dude, every Kamala, dude, when the fucking lockdowns came into effect, do you remember the montage videos of like every Saturday Night Live cast member and Ellen DeGeneres all like in black and white being totally serious? You gotta stay home. You gotta do exactly what the regime is telling you to do right now. Give up all your liberties, says comedian lady. Like, what? And now your comment is, oh, comedians are just sucking up to power? Like, I don't know, man. Look, there is a real ongoing argument, in the same way there's an ongoing argument about whether you should vote Republican or whether you should vote Democrat or whether you should, you know, there's, there's a responsibility. I'll say this, right? I didn't get a chance to interview Donald Trump. I certainly would have done it if I had the opportunity to, no question about that. And I think I can say with a fair amount of credibility that I think you and Natalie and everybody listening probably would know that if I got an interview with Donald Trump, it would have been a much different interview than what Andrew Schultz or Joe Rogan or Theo Von did. I would have done that in a different way. I would have, I don't know. You know, I haven't talked to those guys that much about this, but I don't know how much it weighed on them, but it would have weighed on me that there's a responsibility you have here, man. Like, you got Donald Trump in front of you. I'm just saying.
The proof is you got Massey on for a short segment. He's the absolute best of the best, and you decided to give him a hard time about supporting DeSantis.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I did.
So there you go. No one gets away from the wrath of Dave Smith.
Well, I forgot about that.
If there's a question in your mind, you're going to let someone know it.
Well, how could you not? I don't know. Yeah, at the time, I completely forgot about that. I'm sorry, Thomas Massey. I don't know. Why the fuck are you supporting DeSantis, dude? This is crazy. But anyway, you know, and he's the best. That's right, and he's the best. But so, like, I don't know. There's a debate. Also, the way Theo Von did it, there's a different type of value that adds. You get to see a different side of Donald Trump when it's just Theo Von being like, oh yeah, cocaine's crazy, man. I was up to my limit with it. I had to stop. And he's like,
I'm more of a Sudafed guy.
But look, his brother killed himself with alcohol. That's interesting, man. I don't know. Right. That's part of who makes Donald Trump the person he is. And we got an insight into that we've never gotten before in that interview. You know, so I don't know. If you wanted to say, like, let's just say you weren't being a dick, and this wasn't like, you weren't going on Conan O'Brien and like calling out this one group of comedians, and then clearly it's like the liberals calling out the guys who were cool with Trump. If you were just saying, you know, I wish Rogan had been a little harsher on Trump, on a few points. I wish he had grilled him a little bit more about this or that. I'm listening, at least. I mean, who the fuck are any of us to tell Joe how to do his job? But, like, you could make an argument for that. Maybe there were points he could have asked him about this or that in a different way. But, like, that's the only point you really have. There's really nothing else. And, again, you're not calling out Marc Maron for doing right. the exact same thing but worse with an equally criminal U.S. president.
You know what it really boils down to? I'm going to call this out. We love Joe Rogan, not just because he's a great talent. And I don't consume a lot of podcasts, but still watch a good amount of Rogan clips to this day, and I enjoy it, all right? But Rogan really opened up a lane for comedians for, like, you and I, even though I've never been on the show, but I'm just saying, like, the lane that exists for the style of comedy that we do and all of our friends that have been platformed by him and that things are more popular are all Rogan-based. These guys are old-school Hollywood, and they would love for that not to exist and for them to have more control over all of the kind of the general lane of what's acceptable comedy and what people can
exactly
see
right.
and what's popular. And so in the back of their minds, the fact that there's something cooler out there, more popular, bigger, and that the only comedy that you can get is Conan and who Conan wants to put on his show or Hollywood star and whose friend he wants to produce.
Yep.
At the end of the day, these guys hate the fact that there's a whole non-industry of comedy that's growing
right.
and thriving.
You're 100% right, dude. It's really funny when you put it like that because, you know, it's a thing I've dealt with a bit in my career, in the libertarian world and in the comedy world, but where there will be these guys who just like, he's like, you know, there's some guy who's just 58 and he's worked at Cato for 30 years, you know, and he's just like, wait, what? Who the fuck is this guy? Like, I've, you know what I mean, gone through this whole system, and I'm like, oh yeah, that system doesn't exist anymore. It's a whole new thing, and I am now way bigger than you. And people get resentful about that shit. And yeah, I mean, from my perspective, you know, Joe, like, we've become good friends over the years. But Joe is a guy who, like, changed my life. You know what I mean? Like, and changed so many of my friends' lives. Was the biggest goddamn thing in the world. Did all the things we loved. Like, I love the UFC, and I love his podcast, and then was just the nicest, coolest guy ever. Like, just a really genuinely nice and generous guy. And just helped my career enormously. Like, more than anyone by far. And right, so I look at him like, yo, that's the greatest guy in the fucking world. What do you, someone's got something bad to say? I'll go to war for this guy. Like, he's fucking my hero, you know? But of course, and I've seen this with Anthony Jeselnik before. I've seen this with other guys who, like, they have this, like, contempt for the guys who came up in the podcast game because they made it in the old system. And that was supposed, you know, once you make it in a system, that system seems real justified to you. It's understandably, you know? And, like, systems are systems, you know what I mean? Like, they can be corrupted, they can be, but they're not. It was a very functioning system at one time. It's not as if, like, Comedy Central produced, like, really funny shit for a long time. The system broke down, and the technology changed, both at the same time. But, like, it's not like we said, these are two really funny motherfucking dudes who were listening to talk about. Right. So it's not, I'm not even saying, like, yo, you guys deserve to make it, you know? Fucking Conan wrote on The Simpsons and prime Simpsons. Like, his comedy credentials are God level, you know? Like, and Zach Galifianakis is a very, very funny guy. Done a lot of very funny shit. But, like, yeah, it's a natural human thing to have a little bit of contempt for, like, you know, there's a human desire to want that ladder pulled up behind you because it preserves how special you are. And there is something where, obviously, right now in comedy, we're kind of living in the podcaster moment. And who knows where it's going to go in the future. But, like, the goddamn, you know, there's exceptions. Like, you know, Nate Bargatze, who I love to death, is one of my favorite people in the world. He is really the only one I can think of who almost, like, Nate is a famous stand-up comedian. He does a podcast to give his fans some more content, but, like, it's not like that's what's driving the machine. Right. But with the exception of that, you look at guys like Shane and Andrew Schultz and Tony Hinchcliffe and Theo Vaughn and Bert Kreischer and Tom Segura, and these guys are just on fire, you know what I mean? And it's from podcast fame. And anyway, that is a dynamic. Like, to your point, it seems like maybe that's what's upsetting you more than just the fact that they had conversations with Donald Trump, and that somehow that's a betrayal of the integrity of a comedian to have a recorded conversation. I don't know. To me, that's just, and I will say, even as I'm thinking about it now in my head, the Theo episode was really funny. It was, I should mention that too, now that I'm remembering it. It was funny. Theo was being funny. Theo even putting on a blazer with like a regular t-shirt under it is already kind of funny. So like, yeah, nah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Zach Galifianakis, but I do not agree with you on this. And then I guess the other thing is just like, and we've talked about this before, there is an aspect to all of this. And I don't know, I don't want to get too spiritual on you here, Rob. We'll wrap up in a second. But there is an element, you know, like when a joke, it comes to you. You know, sometimes, that just came to you. And it's kind of feel, and there is something about stand-up, like, why the hell are me and you doing this, dude? Why did we stick with this for as long as we've stuck with this? I don't know. To some degree, you're like, it was just my calling. Like, this was just what I was going to do. I don't know. Like, why do I rant like this into a camera about politics? Why do I go do stand-up comedy tonight? It's like, I'm just called to do these things. And so how could I not? Like, how could I not be me? I don't even know an alternative. I don't know. It's like, this is what I do. And so I'm not going to be made to feel bad for, like, wanting to pursue stand-up comedy and talking shit about politics. So we're going to keep doing it. And there's an audience of people who like watching it. So there you go. I don't know. Last word to you.
Looking forward to the show tonight. And then got a bunch of porches coming up. You can find all the dates at robbernsteincomedy.com. And if you got a porch to submit, you can still submit them at thefireticks.com. And, man, winter was long. It's nice to be out again every weekend and be grooving.
It sure is. All right. Catch you guys next time. Peace.